Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 126. Today, my guest is the man, the myth, the legend, Aaron Fennell. How are you, sir?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing okay, man. Just trying to get some freaking warm air to come through here so we can get guys back in the field so we'll cheer up a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of a shift that it waited, at least for us. I know from about the middle of Nebraska all the way to the Atlantic Ocean, they have had a shitty, shitty winter. But here, we had 40s, like, every day in January and February. Yeah. And now winter showed up in March, so that's a lot of fun. Yeah, good time.
We're going to have winter from, like, March to May, probably, and then just kind of skip that right into summer. So I'm looking
could
forward
well
to
be. We'll have like a week in the 70s, and then it'll be 90.
Yeah. Yep, it'll be 90 degrees out, and there'll still be 3 feet of snow on the ground, and just watching it melt. So it's,
you know,
that's crazy.
I'm excited, and this is an old tired joke that I say every time we have weather like this, but those old school John Deere furrow openers that are the just two discs, I think they're going to make a comeback over the clean sweep and all that other fancy stuff because those discs move more snow than a finger wheel.
Yeah, that is a true statement.
Yeah, been scavenging everybody's junk pile to corner the market on them.
Yeah.
Pretty excited about that.
So if you take a look across the United States right now and you're talking to people all over the place, I mean, it is – we've been having spurts in business, right? So we get these 2 or 3 week runs where things are amazing, and then we get this two or three week kind of halfway lull of not so charged up energy right now, and we're still kind of going back and forth. Are you still getting the feel that most guys are in the not because they want to, because they have to buying mode, or do you feel like there is some optimism out there that's stirring up some buying pressure?
I think, for the most part, I don't think, at least as far as what is conveyed both ways in the conversation, I don't think there's been a lot of doing it because they have to. I think it's more of a, let me back that up. I think it's a very rare instance of the whole have to part of it because they can patch together what they have and run, you know. And a lot of stuff I've sold, whether it's been late model, low hour, 8Rs, late model combines, a lot of it has been no trade.
Right.
So
I've seen a lot of that, yep.
I'm not sure, and I know through the sales staff, you know, seeing the email alerts and whatnot, there's been a lot of no trade on high dollar items. That would tell me that it's not so much a have to scenario as a we would really like to and we think we can, so we're going to go ahead and do it. So I don't know if that's part of it. Plus, as we all know right now, there's not a lot of gap in the trade value, selling price, auction market. So I don't know if a lot of that guys are going to sell themselves, throw it on an auction, you know, do whatever type of deal too.
Yeah.
But it really surprises me with the dollars of selling price of a piece that there isn't a trade on it.
Yeah.
Given the world we're in, you know.
That's one thing about the auction marketplace. You take a look around, there is so much parity almost between, especially on the, I would say, 2012, and basically 10-year-old to 5-year-old equipment, right?
Right.
The parity that you look out there when you watch stuff sell at auction, and then when you watch it sell what it sells for at the on the retail basis, like at the, on the lot, man, it is so, I've never seen it this tight before, where it's been this close to each other when you start looking at retail value versus auction value. I mean, you're within, man, there's some cases stuff sells for more, the exact same thing is selling more at the auction than selling for in our lot.
Right.
And that's a, that kind of gives you an idea of where, and what the buying public is doing now. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are looking at auction first, you know, trying to see if they can't get that deal and move it over to the retail side after the fact. You know, how many guys have we talked to inside our organization that have said, you know, well, I'm going to watch this one sell. If it doesn't sell, I'll come buy yours. Or right. If I can't get it for my number, you know, whatever. And there was an instance a week or two ago where a guy was looking at a combine and he ended up buying ours cheaper than he bought the one on the auction lot, you know. So, it kind of shows you where the market's at right now, what the mentality of folks are.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm honestly surprised, talking with a red buddy and a yellow, red, green, silver buddy in the last couple weeks, you know, they both kind of have seen the same thing in their spread throughout the country where, you know, dating back the last 6 months or so, you had, you know, September was great. October was a little quiet, which it always is.
Right.
November was great. December was crazy. January had no let up from December.
Right.
February was even better than January and December. And the second that it hit March 1st, the phones rang one time, and it's the 8th today.
Right. Well, I mean, here's a scary thing I'm looking at right now when I look out there, and this is, you know, you guys are buying up, getting ready for spring, you know, and now you look across the, basically from the Continental Divide, like you said, all the way over to the East Coast of the United States, all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, across there, there's a lot of field work that didn't get done in the fall.
Oh, there's virtually zero field work that got done.
We're looking at guys that, you know, you start talking to guys in Iowa, Illinois, Kentucky, you know, northern, the very southern part of the Corn Belt, they still have soybeans standing in their field from last year in a lot of places, you know.
Yeah.
And they have zero field work done, and they're like, well, we should be planting today, but we can't because it's, you know, we had 2 inches of rain last night, and on top of the foot and a half we had over the last, you know, the last 2 months we've had, and now we're looking at, they're getting anxious, right? And, you know, every farmer has got a timeline in their head of what they're, of when they're supposed to plant, when they're supposed to do field work, when they're supposed to strip till, so on and so forth. And if they don't get that done, they become, oh my God, the world's coming to an end. And I think that's where we're at right now when you start looking at the way the sales cycle is starting to kind of unfold.
You know what else they become?
What's that?
Crabby as hell.
I've always found them to be really nice when they're behind the eight ball. I've never noticed that.
No, and that's one thing, talking with other dealers across the country, tillage, man. You know, we, on a previous podcast last year, probably a year ago, was, what are we going to do with all this tillage equipment? Nobody wants any tillage equipment. And now, if you have a guy that wants a VT, for instance, which is a prime example, because it controls residue and goes just deep enough to air the ground out a little bit, you better buy it now because it won't be there tomorrow.
Right.
You know, I've been doing some order buying for a few guys, and with one guy, I'm on my 7th BT because all of the 6 of the other ones sold.
Yeah.
That is. And it's just like, good heavens. Strip tillers, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just all over the place. And, you know, what might help that a little bit is as stuff is inching north ever so slowly, because, you know, I know guys are planting in Texas, guys are strip tilling in Oklahoma, but there's a wall. Trump's wall is severely north right now, weather related.
Right.
You know, once you hit Kansas, the brakes are on hard. And, you know, guys in western Kansas complaining about moisture like they never dreamed of in their life.
Right. Yeah, that's something you don't hear very often. It's so wet out here, I can't hardly get anything done. Well, holy crap, man. When's the last time you say that? It's so dry, you can't get anything planted.
Right.
You know, so
right. It's don't drop that wrench, it's going to fall down and crack. That's one of my dad's favorite lines. It's so dry, I can lose a half-inch wrench in a crack.
Yeah, I had some pictures from a buddy of mine over in Omaha, and he's showing a picture of his front yard, and I bet he's got 3.5 feet of snow in his front yard.
Oh, I know.
It's just crazy. You know, it's just the amount of snow.
If they get a flake, they get a foot over there.
Oh, man. And they're supposed to get more this weekend, so that entire area, that whole southeastern Nebraska, western Iowa area, you know, where guys are, like I said, should be pulling out the planter and be like, any day now, boys, any day. And they're a long ways from any day coming anywhere near in a field near them, right? It's been a very very odd winter. You know, we had a cold snap in October, and then it kind of mild out and got pretty nice. And then we got this cold snap here at the end of February, and my first part of February, and now we're really getting into the cold weather. So it's going to be a trip to see how it works out and what happens. So let's jump in here to some equipment talk. So the thing that keeps me up at night right now more than ever is combines, man.
Really?
I mean,
I never
really talked about combines very much.
I don't believe you.
I never really talked about the combines that much when we're on here. But here, there's been an explosion of used combines on the marketplace, and it's been all of a sudden. And maybe it hasn't been all of a sudden. I just have just kind of been slow to kind of watch the trend take place. But if you look across what's out there, there's not going to be any less pressure on the market from the 2012-2014 model stuff. There's a huge spike in there, and you look at the hour range that's out there, and that's some stuff that we track. Those 1,000 separator to 2,000 separator hour combines, there's just a massive amount of them out there, and it really stems from I didn't trade anything during 13 to 18, so now I'm ready to do something. Lo and behold, my choices. You know, there's not that many 300 to 700 hour combines out there. I mean, there's a fair amount of them out there, but not enough to fulfill the appetite of what's being traded in on that higher hour stuff.
Right. You know, a good example of that, we talk about that once in a while. You know, the everything on the market's 12 to 14, and I do some tutoring, I guess I'd call it, of newer salesmen, you know, and was riding around with a guy a couple months back, and we stopped at this one guy's place, and beautiful line of machinery, and we get back in the pickup, and, you know, and I noticed everything. There was no, you know, I could tell the combine had some hours on it, but everything was kept up real well. We get back in the pickup, and I said, well, you know, because that guy was looking for a couple things. And he says, that's another one of my customers that's just like all the rest. And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, those two 8Rs, the 8RT, the combine, the heads, he says, they every single one of them is a 2013. Regardless of what model, what piece of machinery it is, everything is a 2013. The only variance in that, the planters he was going to trade were 14. So, I mean, that guy's a, you know, decent-sized farmer. Not a mega farm, but decent-sized farmer. And everything in that shed was 13 or 14. So, there is a lot of that out there. Now, what I would say with combine-wise, I feel like there is a little less pressure in the 12 to 14s due to the fact that as they're coming in and dealers are getting their prices adjusted for what that market now is. You know, those things, 12s are a 70 series, if not a little lower. You know, 13s are getting way down there. 14s are a little bit of a bridge, but definitely closer to the 13 side than the 15 side. So I think that has a little bit of help to it. The whole process with it, though, is is no matter how right they are, there's only so many 50s, 60s, 70s out there to roll, you know. You've got to go find a guy with a 2,500-hour 60 series and get him into that cheap S. You know, it's going to take a lot of that and then get that 60 series to the waist south.
Right.
And, you know, if guys can do that, there's going to be a ton of them. There's going to be a pile of them. Half of them, you're going to just drop them on their belly on the north side of your lot and build snow fence. But the other half, you can, I think if you can get your numbers right and take a little bit on the chin, not a lot, just a little bit on the chin, I think you can flush them out in that method. So,
yeah. No, I think.
Plus, it also surprises me how many, and I know we've talked about this before, but I'm up to selling a non-def 14 to the way south.
Yeah.
You know, that shocks me. Still in the back of my hayseed mind, that's 9600 country up there, and I haven't sold them a 9600 for ages. You know, yeah. It's been 70s and S's, and apparently the love affair of the 70 series in the lower 48 has caught a strong northern wind from the polar vortex and blown south because they're in the same boat. They just love them. Yeah. And I've seen them overpay, so
well,
whatever.
You think about when you were, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when the 9600, 9610 boom, you know, and all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, they took a 50 series, you know. Well, we're up. That's the same kind of concept we're at now. We're looking at a 9770. Right. It's 10 years old. If you get a 2008 model, 11 years old.
Yep.
So there's going to be, that's kind of par for the course when you really look at what happens with the Mexican used equipment marketplace. They're usually 10 to 15 years back of whatever the most current model is, and that's where they're at. You know, even if you get a 2012 S670, that's 7 years old. You know, so it's kind of an amazing thing to think about, but it's a 7-year-old combine, so you got some issues there. My biggest thing that I have right now with combines is I still kind of look at where we're at on price and how that's going to pay, how that kind of goes into the buying structure of the used buyer. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like a 2012 combine is going to be the same as a 2017 combine, right? Because they're not. There's a lot of things, no matter what color it is, there's a lot of stuff going on in those combines that do increase efficiencies. But at the same time, with the current market that we're in, you have to be very conscious of the guy that's going to pay you $325,000 or $350,000 or whatever the number is for that used combine. Another 50 or 60 or 70 or 80,000 bucks, he can get a new one. And more than likely, they're going to be the ones that are going to buy that new one. So now you start playing the game of how far back of the new do I have to be competitive with that new piece, with the programs and the warranties and so on and so forth. When you talk to guys out there, what are you hearing? You hearing anything, man, I got more combines to do with, or I've got just the right number, but I'm just having a hard time finding buyers, or what are you hearing out there when you talk to folks?
Yeah, it's kind of a, there honestly hasn't been much talk about it, just given time of year. You know, everybody waits till it's 0 hour and then panics, you know, typically. I don't know anybody singing the combine blues very much, and I don't know of anybody that's said we're just dried or we need some combines. You know, I've had dealers, and surprisingly a few dealers and wholesalers get a hold of me on, you know, kind of specific combines. Of course, 780s, had a lot of dealers reach out on them. Wholesalers reach out on 16, 17, 680s, 670s. You know, so there is a little action out there. I don't know that it's 100% gloom and doom. It's just kind of time of year type of deal, you know. And then coupled on with the last 2 weeks being real slow, I don't see that. It's not, I don't have a sky falling mentality to it, but I definitely don't have a, oh, that'll be all right, it'll work itself out BS with it either. So I don't know. I agree with you that there has been a big infusion of combines on the marketplace, and the problem I see with it, as you see with it, because you're the math teacher in a John Deere hat, is that it's all the wrong stuff. You know, there's not an infusion of 300 hour combines. There's an infusion of 1,000 to 1,500 or 1,500 to 2,000. And that's where the problems lie.
Yeah. And I don't even so much think that there's a combine by volume problem. I think there's a combine lack of interest problem right now more than anything. I mean, a lot of guys are still in the, I don't know, there's some guys that are out there that are still in the, I'll just keep fixing it, and then, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 is cheaper than a $50,000 or $60,000 payment, right? And that's kind of the mentality a lot of guys are having right now because of the situation they're in. Some guys, though, are at the point where they've had 2 or 3 years of $20,000+ worth of repairs, and they're looking at it like, man, I've got a $100,000+ combine, $150,000 combine, and I've already spent a third of the value of the combine or more.
Right.
You know, fixing this thing in the last couple of years, so maybe diminishing returns. Maybe I need to look at getting something different. You know, maybe there's something in there. So.
And you're right. It's the problem out there, and I agree with you on this. And you know, I've said it before. I always flew a flag that there will never be used combines that are legitimately worth $300,000+.
Wrong,
but there are. There are now. and what sucks about that is, you know, there are places in this country where you can buy a quarter of ground for that.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a necessary evil, you know, to a point. But I think that's just the biggest thing with it. A guy always seems to have an easier time wrapping his head around a $300,000 tractor than a $300,000 combine, for the simple fact that that tractor does a hell of a lot of jobs.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're using it a lot more.
You know, even on a no-till farm, it at least does two jobs: it plants and grain carts. You know, whereas that combine has one job. You know, it's a very important job, but it's still one job, and it's not even so much the job, it's the, I've heard it time and time again, $300,000 for 6 weeks out of the year. And I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. So that's probably the biggest thing with it, you know. But I would agree with you to a point. It's not so much a volume thing as a price point thing, and just it kind of sucks. But you gotta, it's only, you can only get, take a 700 for instance, and the 700s are not an issue. There's been excellent demand for those. There really has been.
There has been, yeah.
There, it's not so much an issue of, how do I want to say this? It's not so much an issue of, shit, I lost my train of thought. Never mind. It was going to change the equipment business, and I just lost it.
It sounded like it was going to be pretty powerful, whatever it was.
It was.
I was waiting with bated breath here, just like,
I know.
Great. I can't wait to hear what happens.
I blew it. I had my shot.
You had your shot, and you missed.
It was like being at the combine and running a 5.6. Speaking of combines,
right. Yeah, that's a good segue there, and I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
What else is out there right now that you're paying attention to that has either a positive or negative vibe in your world?
A thing I know that a lot of dealers are struggling with is 6,000 series tractors.
I can't imagine
slow
why.
Slow clap for the state mowing contracts.
Yeah.
Awesome. that's had a... Yeah. You know, when I started wholesaling, God bless, 9 years ago, everybody and their dog, you could flip loader tractors all day long. And now, every dealer is always, hey, do you need any sixes? Hey, I got some sixes for sale. And they're all because of the same thing.
Yeah. But if you look across the board, though, even if it, I don't care if it's a New Holland or Case or an AGCO piece or whatever it might be, that is 100 to 150 horsepower range tractor that normally was the all day everyday tractor for every dealership, whether regardless of color, that's still right now. And of any segment of our market right now that has been healthy through this quote unquote downturn since 2013 has been the cattle market, right? And
right.
You just don't see a lot of folks. And I say healthy, I'm going to use that term loosely because it's not...
Yeah, I was going to say, that damn cattle market, one day those guys are millionaires, and the next day they're handing out carts at Walmart, and then the day after that, they're a thousandaire.
Right.
You know? They have very, very cyclical in the last few years.
Here of late, when they've gone to the sale barn, they come out with tens of dollars. So, I mean, things are really working out well for them. But that being said, you know, that's always been that thing, and it's just not been as easy to sell a loader tractor as guys think it's been. I mean, we still have a lot of guys that are asking for, you know, like a 7830, 7230.
Yeah. When that market that's troublesome right now,
mm-hmm.
when you can rewind the clock and they're 10-year-old tractors, they sell night and day, even 5-year-olds. It's the 1 and 2-year-olds that are kind of especially the 1-year-olds.
Yeah.
Those national account lease rolls or whatever.
Yeah.
Are a little problematic. And you're right. It doesn't matter if they're red, green, blue, yellow, whatever. We've had all colors of them, and they've all been a little bit of a challenge. I mean, they all still move. I'd probably take them over some other things in the market. It's just kind of eye-opening from what that segment used to be, right. Even a year and a half, 2 years ago, to what it is now, mm-hmm. has changed a lot. You know, combines always suck,
dude.
loader tractor segment has always been relatively hot. At least warm, and now it's, you know, cooled off quite a bit here of late. So,
yeah,
I think for large row crops, you know, there's days I think that's a dead market, and then the next 2 weeks after that, we don't have enough,
right?
You know, so that's always a market that is day to day, week to week, you know, mm-hmm. four wheel drives are still soft.
Yeah.
Still soft. Four big four-wheel drives. You know, I know within our market, the, you know, 9230, 9330, smallest 2 9Rs, row crop rubber, 3-point PTO. There's been times those have been, even last year at this time, I wouldn't have wanted any.
Right.
You know, and now this year they're very hot.
Yeah.
Track tractors, real hit or miss, and that's whether they're 8s or 9s.
Right.
So big 9R wheel combines, sprayers. It seems like 1 month they're the best thing to own. The next month, why do we have these?
Right.
Planters are crazy hot. Everybody knows that all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I have more dealers. I know there's more dealers everywhere looking for planters than anything.
Right.
Good thing every dealer out there went and gave away all those Culture 14s for nothing on auctions, and now that's exactly what everybody wants.
Yep.
I would buy 10 of them today. 10 of them.
Well, there you go, folks. Aaron's looking for 10 combines. Or 10 planters, sorry.
Not 10 combines, no. I enjoy my job too much.
So they have a... That is the cool thing about planters right now is... It's not so much that they're easy to trade for, I want to say that, but guys can easily justify the number because for the most part, they're getting exactly back to the penny almost what they paid for it at auction 5 years ago. And they're,
right.
They've put 20,000 acres on it or whatever over the last 5 years. And they've basically used it for free when you really start looking at what their trade value is now. Granted, what they're trading for now is about 3.5 times more than what they,
yeah,
what they've got, which is a bit to come over. But same, not being said, whether it's John Deere planter with the ExactEmerge or whether it's, you know, some kind of precision rig out there, they are getting more bang for their buck out of the planter that they're buying than the planter that they had that they're trading in. Just by,
oh, absolutely,
really look at emergence and speed and accuracy,
yep,
and depth control and so on and so forth. It's you're getting a bigger return than what you have. So, but there again, some,
yeah, there's a lot of technology that leads to big agronomic advantages on those new machines, whether it's, you know, for a deer, whether it's a ME5 or an ExactEmerge,
yeah,
you know, or a whatever the hell they are, 2150, 2155, red one, you know, the white, the Harvest International's, the everything,
right,
out there.
Yep. Yep.
And if it's not fancy enough, you can spend $100,000 a row and put a lot more shit on it if you want.
Yeah, you can. You can definitely make it the Picatinny rail of planters pretty simple if you want to do that.
Yeah.
Hang whatever you want off of it.
There's, yeah,
plenty of stuff to be had out there. So, you know, I still feel, you know, I get banged around here pretty good every once in a while on some stuff, but I still feel pretty good about the end of the year. I really think that this year is going to be, I still feel like we're going to have a good year, you know. The start of this year is really no different than the start of the last 3 years, if you take a look at it. I mean, January, February, March have all been somewhat steady. They haven't been barn burners for the most part, but they kind of plug along and they go, and then they take off and it runs through harvest, through summer, and then there's a little bit of a lull, and then there's a pickup at the end of the year. So I really don't think there's going to be much different here than what we've seen in the last 3 years. Now, barring something catastrophic happening, you know, some level of no deal with China thing, you know, I feel like that's going to get wrapped up this month. I really think it's going to be there, and that's going to have some effect on the marketplace. I still think the marketplace, even after the China thing is taken care of, there's still just a lot of stocks out there, right? So we got, today's Friday the 8th, and we've got a March, and we've got a report coming out here today that's going to shed some light on where we're at. And we got next month, we got the March quarterly stock report. So that's going to give even a bigger picture of where we're at. So, I mean, the China thing is going to give some security to the markets, and that's what they're going to be looking for. But we still have a lot of stocks to worry about as far as bringing up prices and stuff like that. So, it's going to be, I'm very, I don't want to say like super bullish by any means, but I'm not bearish by any means either.
I would say this year, at least from what I've seen, this year is better than last year to start out, first 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's guys out there.
I would say better by quite a bit. And, you know, last year it was, stuff was moving decent till the China disaster there in the summer, and then the phone didn't ring for 2 months. But, you know, we're already dealing with that, and stuff's moving better. China did buy some Milo yesterday or the day before.
Right on.
That's cool.
You make some vodka out of it. Get some.
Huh?
You gonna make some vodka out of it.
Yeah. So, you know, there's more to this world than China.
I know.
Everybody knows that.
Yep.
Some guys get, you know, especially the the talking heads, everybody, China. Well, and granted, they buy a lot of beans, you know, that goes without saying, but that's one country in the world.
Right. Yeah.
Granted, a lot of people and a lot of money, but it's one country in the world. There's other routes.
Yeah, there's seventh of the world's population, but whatever, right?
Yeah. It's whatever.
Well, they're just, I mean, you're just seeing circumvent the U.S., so they'll go buy all of Argentina's beans, and Argentina will come buy all of our beans, and it's just whatever. There's a finite amount of beans in the world, right? You can't just be like, I'm going to pop up a soybean factory over here and just make some soybeans real fast. A little bigger than that.
Make meat in the lab. I'm sure they can make soybeans in the lab.
They got, fake meat or whatever, and now they've got the fake soybeans, so.
There you go.
Outstanding. I'm jacked.
You can make fake pork, mm-hmm. and then you can set up a whole fake hog confinement thing inside of a lab.
You could have a whole new line of pork called Fork, you know, fake pork. So it'd be.
There you go.
Say, boom, I just made a marketing plan. Get some. Things are.
Boom. Done.
Things are taking off. All right, dude, we've been going for a little bit here. Good conversation as usual. Closing thoughts before we shut it down.
Oh, I guess my overview of the market is fairly optimistic. Definitely some rough spots, but definitely some really bright spots. So I guess I'm probably not flying a flag that the year in general is going to be so great, but I think it's going to be a year much like last year was, where, you know, every deal counts. You got to work it to death and see what you can get done. So, but in general, fairly optimistic. Combines are an issue. Other than that, just plug away and make some shit happen.
Yeah. No, I would agree with all that stuff. So.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, it's true. I mean, you're a juggernaut in this industry, so you gotta agree.
Well, emphasis on the not the juggernaut.
Right on. All right, folks, want to reach out, buy something from you, or pick your brain on what's going on? How to do that?
At Aaron Fintel on Twitter. I'm on there quite a bit. Post a lot of stuff for sale on there, or. Call me, text me, 308-760-1193. My cell phone, always on me. That or shoot me an email, apintel@21equip.com.
Right on. Also, check him out on his Throwback Iron page. It's got some good stuff on there from time to time. So. And I am Casey Seymour with the Moving Iron Podcast, and you can find me on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, the Facebookie. You can just look me up. I'm all over the place. So, at Moving Iron LLC, buddy. So, Aaron, thanks for being on the show again, and we will talk to you here in about an hour.
You bet, dude.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at movingironpodcast@movingironpodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Nellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit movingironllc.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and globalagnetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people. Working hard for you and me. Moving iron, time and time again. Through the years, you'll find us here. Moving.